Book 7. How Aeus and Hector fought in single combat, and how the Trojans sent a herald to propose peace. Hector now sallied forth from the gates, and his brother Alexandros with him, both full of ardor for the battle. The sight of them was as welcome to the Trojan host as a fair wind when God is pleased to send it for sailors who are weary and worn out with rowing over the sea. Then Alexandros killed Menestheus, whose father was Areithous, the bludgeon man, and his mother, Philomedusa, his home in Arni. Hector struck Aeneas on the neck under the helmet and brought him down. Glaucus the Lycian ran his spear through the shoulder of Aphinous Dexidiades as he was mounting his chariot. He fell to the ground and moved no more. But when Athena saw her friends falling thus, she shot down from Olympus. Apollo saw her come and issued out of the citadel to help his Trojans. The two met by the oak tree, and Apollo called out, "Why are you here again, you daughter of Zeus, in all this excitement? Why has your hot temper brought you from Olympus? Do you want to turn the battle and give the victory to your Danaans? You have no pity when Trojans fall, but listen to me, and I will tell you what is best to do. Let us put a stop to fighting for this day. Afterward, they shall fight again until they make an end for Ilius, for I see you goddesses mean to destroy this city." Athena replied, "So be it, Shudafar. That was just what I had in mind myself in coming here. Very well. How do you think to stop it?" Apollo said, "Let us move Hector to challenge all comers to single combat. Then the Achaeans will put on their mettle and send someone to fight Hector." Athena consented, and at once their compact became plain to the mind of Helenus Priam's son, the diviner. So he said to Hector, "My dear prince, you know a good notion as well as Zeus could himself. Would you listen to me for a moment? I am your brother, you know. Go out yourself and challenge all comers to single combat, and let both armies sit down and look on. For it is not your fate to die now. The voice of the immortal gods has told me so." Hector was delighted when he heard these words. He marched between the armies, holding his spear by the middle of the shaft, and kept back his own battalions. They all sat down, and then Agamemnon made his men do the like. Apollo and Athena, in the form of two vultures, perched upon the tall oak tree and looked on with great enjoyment. The ranks were set close and bristled with shields and helmets and spears, as the waves of the sea ripple and crinkle when the west wind blows it black. Then Hector addressed them all. "Hear me speak, Trojans and Achaeans both, and let me tell you what is in my mind. Crinides, throned on high, would not let us keep our sworn treaty, but he ordains a hard struggle for us all until either you shall take the castle of Troy, or you shall be vanquished yourselves beside your own ships. Here among you are the greatest men of all the Achaean peoples. Now then, if any one of you has a mind to fight with me, let him come forth and be your champion against Hector. Here is what I propose, and let Zeus be witness on both parts. If that man shall strike me down, let him strip me and take my armor for his spoil. But my body he shall give back to be carried home, that my people may give me dead my portion of fire. But if Apollo grant me success and I strike him down, I will strip off his armor and take it into sacred Troy and hang it before the temple of Apollo Shudafar. But the body I will give back, that his friends may carry it to their camp to give him funeral and build him a barrow beside the broad Hellespont. Then men will say in far distant generations to come, as they sail along the shore, 'Yonder is the barrow of a man dead long ago, a champion whom famous Hector slew.' So my fame will never be forgotten." Silence fell upon all. They were ashamed to refuse, and they feared to accept. But at last Menelaus rose to his feet and cried out loudly in anger and contempt, "Oh, you boasters, you women! I cannot call you men. Here is a stain upon us, a terrible terror of a stain, if not a man will go out to meet Hector. May you all rot into mud and water where you sit, weak and inglorious. I will arm me against this man myself, but the cords of victory are held above by the immortal gods." Then he put on his armor, and then, Menelaus, the end of your life would have come, for Hector was far stronger, had not the Achaean princes sprung up and laid hold of you. King Agamemnon himself caught his brother by the right hand and cried, You are mad, Menelaus, and what is the use of madness like that? Hold back, however hard it is, and don't fight a better man than yourself just for a challenge. Everyone dreads Hector Priamides. Even Achilles shudders to meet this man in battle, and he is a much better man than you. Just sit down among your friends, and they will put up another champion for this man. Even if he is fearless and a glutton for a fight, I vow he will be glad to rest his knees if he gets clear out of this battle. He succeeded in changing his brother's mind, for what he said was true, and the servants took off his armor. Then Nestor rose and spoke. Look here now, what tribulation has come upon our country and our people? It would make Peleus groan aloud, poor old man. Ah, what a wise man he was. What a good king. I remember well how he enjoyed asking me all about the great men of our people, who were their fathers and who were their sons. If he could hear about them now, all trembling before Hector, how he would lift up his hands to heaven and pray that his soul might leave his body and go down to Hades. Oh, Father Zeus, Athena, Apollo, if I were young and strong now as I was, when Pelians and Arcadians gathered and fought beside the swift river of Celadon before the walls of Phaea about the stream of Iardanos. On the other side stood their champion, Erythalion. A grand fellow he was, and he wore the armor of King Areithous, the glorious Areithous, a name of note among men and women. They called him the Bludgeon Man, because he fought not with bow or spear, but with an iron bludgeon which broke upon the battalions. Lycurgus killed him. He trusted to skill, not to force, and killed him in a narrow lane where his bludgeon could not save his life. Lycurgus got in first and ran him through the middle with his spear, and down he came on his back. The victor took his arms, which were the gift of Ares. After that, Lycurgus wore them himself in battle, but when he grew old, he gave them to Erythalion, his faithful squire, and Erythalion, wearing these, challenged all the best. They were all trembling and affrighted. Not a man would dare. But my daring mind, in its boldness, set me out to fight him, although I was youngest of them all. And fight him I did, and Athena gave me the victory. That was the biggest and strongest man I ever killed. He covered a great space, sprawling all abroad. If I were only young now as I was then, if my old strength were still in me, then Hector would soon have a fight. But as for you, the best of all the Achaeans, not one of you is ready to face Hector cheerfully. At the taunting words, 9 men rose up. First, my lord Agamemnon strode forward. Diomedes followed, then Big Aeus and Little Aeus. After them, Idomeneus and his comrade Meriones. Eurypylus, Eumon's son. Thoas and Draemon's son, Prince Odysseus himself. All these were ready to fight Hector. To these, Nestor said, Cast lots, now all of you, and that shall be the choice. That man will be a blessing to the Achaeans, and he shall have a blessing upon his own spirit if he comes out safe from the dangerous contest. Then each man put a mark on his lot, and all the lots were thrown into King Agamemnon's helmet. And all the host lifted up their hands to heaven and prayed, O Father Zeus, let Aeus win the lot, or Diomedes, or the great king of Mycenae himself. Geranian Nestor shook the helmet, and out jumped the lot which they had prayed for, the lot of Aeus. A herald carried it round from left to right and displayed it to the champions. Each took a look at it and shook his head. Last of all, it came to Aeus, who held out his hand, and when the lot was dropped in his hand, he knew the mark he had scratched upon it. Great was his joy. He threw the lot down by his foot and called out loudly, My friends, this is my lot. I am glad indeed, for I think I shall conquer Prince Hector. Come along and let me put on my armor. Then pray all of you to Lord Zeus Cronion, quietly, by yourselves, that the enemy may not hear. Or indeed, openly, why not? We fear no man. No one is strong enough to make me run unless I want to run, and no one is clever enough. Greenhorns like that are not born and bred in Salamis. So they all made their prayer to Zeus Cronion. O Father Zeus, throned upon Ida, most glorious and most great, grant victory to Aeus and high renown. Or, if thou lovest Hector and carest for him, grant equal power and equal glory to both. Now Aeus armed himself and made ready. Then he marched out prodigious, like the god of war, when he goes forth to battle among men whom Cronion has pitted against each other in mortal combat. So terrible was that prodigious man, the safeguard of the nation, as he marched with long strides and a smile on his grim face, shaking his long spear. This was a joyful sight for his countrymen, but the Trojans felt their limbs tremble, and Hector's own heart beat fast. But he could not now retreat or disappear among the crowd, since he was the challenger. Aeus came near, holding the great shield like a tower, 7 ox hides with a coating of bronze, which had been made for him by Tychius of Hyle, the master armorer. 7 layers of ox hide, I say, the hide of prime bulls, with an 1/8 of bronze. That shield Telamonian Aeus held before his breast as he stood within reach of Hector, and said in threatening tones, "Now, Hector, you shall know, man to man, you alone and I alone, what champions remain among the Danaans, even without Achilles' lion-heart man-breaker. He stays away nursing his grudge against Agamemnon, but we are left to meet you, and not a few. You begin, sir, and strike first." Hector answered, "Telamonian Aeus, my very good lord, do not tease me as if I were a feeble boy or a woman who knows nothing of the works of war. I tell you that I know well how to fight and how to kill. Round to the right of me, round to the left of me, I know well how to handle the buckler, trusty shield of seasoned hide. I know how to charge my chariot into the melee of galloping mares. I know well to tread the war dance when it comes to a stand-up fight. But I don't care to use a sly, furtive shot at a man such as you are. Let the world see if I can hit you." With these words, he poised the spear and cast. It struck the great shield full upon the outer bronze, the 8th coat. Through 6 coats the point ran, but held at the 7th. Then Aeus cast his own long spear and struck Hector's round buckler. Right through it went, and through corselet also. The blade cut the tunic on Hector's side, but he swerved and saved his life. Then both pulled out their spears and leapt at each other like a couple of lions or wild boars. Hector struck the middle of the great shield, but he did not pierce the metal, and the point was bent. Then Aeus, with a leap, pierced the round buckler. The blade went through and cut the neck, so that the red blood bubbled up, and Hector staggered back. But Hector was not finished yet. He moved back a pace or two and picked up a stone lying on the ground, black, big, and ragged. This he threw and struck the great shield on the boss till the metal rang again. Aeus followed up with a still larger stone, swung it around his head, and cast it with all his might. This great millstone smashed with round buckler inwards and brought the man down. He fell on his back, huddled under the buckler, but Apollo set him on his feet again. And now they would have been hard at it, cut and thrust with swords, but suddenly the 2 heralds came forward, Talthybius from the Trojan side, Idaeus from the Argives, who knew well their duty as spokesmen in the name of men and gods. They held their staves between the fighters, and Idaeus spoke in solemn words. "Enough, dear sons, fight no more. For Zeus Cloud-Gatherer loves you both, and you are warriors both. That, indeed, we all know. Night is now upon us. It is good to give way to Madam Night." Telamonian Aeus answered and said, "Then bid Hector give the word. It was he who challenged all comers. Let him speak first. I am ready to do whatever he may say." Hector said, "Aeus, indeed, God has given you stature and strength and skill, and you are the greatest spearman of your nation. Then for this time let us break off, for this one day. Later we will fight again, until fate shall decide between us and give the victory to one or the other. Now night is upon us, and it is good to give way to Madam Night. Then you shall comfort all your people, especially your friends and comrades, and I will return to my city to comfort the men and the women of Troy, who will enter the congregation of the gods with thanksgiving for my sake. But let us each bestow a gift upon the other, that all the world may say, 'These 2 fought indeed in bitter combat for a match, but they parted again in friendship.'" Then Hector brought forward and gave his sword with silver knobs, and with it the sheath and well-cut shoulder strap. Aeus offered his girdle brilliant with crimson dye. Thus they parted and went each to his own friends. Glad indeed the Trojans were to see their man returning whole in life and limb, safe from the invincible hands of fiery Aeus. Glad were the Achaeans on their part when they led back Aeus to Agamemnon in the pride of victory. King Agamemnon made a feast of his quarters. He killed a bull of 5 years at the altar of Zeus Cronion. They flayed him and cut him up, carved the meat deftly, and put it on the spits, grilled all with care, and laid it out on the board. Then there was a fine feast, enough for all, but Aeus had the honors of the chine piece, which King Agamemnon gave him with his own hands. When the guests had eaten and drunken well, then came Nestor's turn. Nestor, the grand old man, whose counsel was always the best. He rose first and spoke with words of good advice. "Your Majesty, and you, my good lords and gallant gentlemen, many of our people lie dead upon the field. Ares has poured out their bloods on the banks of Scamandros. Their souls have gone down into the house of death. Tomorrow, then, let us make no battle. Let us assemble with oxen and mules and bring in our dead. Then we will burn their bodies a little beyond where the ships lie, that we may take home the bones for their sons when we return to our native land. Let us gather them in from the battlefield and raise one great barrow for all without distinction. And joined to the barrow, let us make walls and towers to protect our ships and our camp. We will build proper gateways by which horses and chariots can pass, and outside we will dig a moat near the walls, to keep off horses and men on the other side, in case the Trojans press us too hard." This was approved by all. The Trojans also held an assembly, alarming and riotous, on the citadel before Priam's doors. Antenor spoke first. "My countrymen, and our good allies and helpers, I have something to propose to you. Come with me, and let us hand over Argive Helen and her wealth to the princes of Argos. We have broken our oath by this late fighting, and that can bring us no good." Then Prince Alexandros rose, Helen's husband, and said plainly, "Antenor, I don't like what you say there. You can find a better proposal than that. If you really mean what you say, the gods have surely taken away your wits. Now I will speak to the brave men of Troy. I tell you straight, I will not give up my wife. But all the wealth which I brought with her from Argos I will give gladly, and add more of my own." When he ended, Priam Dardanides himself arose and gave them prudent advice. "My countrymen, and our good allies, let me speak and tell you what I think. Take your meal as usual, set guards, and let all keep watch. Then in the morning, let Aeneas go on parley to the princes of Argos, Agamemnon, and Menelaus. Let him tell them the proposal of Alexandros, for whom all this quarrel came about, and let him add another if they approve, that we keep truce until we shall burn our dead. After that we will fight again until fate shall decide between us and give victory to one or the other side." They did accordingly, and next morning Aeneas went to the enemy camp. The herald found the Danaans in assembly beside Agamemnon's vessel, and there, standing in their midst, he gave his message in a loud voice. "Princes of Argos and my good lords of all Achaea, Priam and the men of Troy have commanded me to tell you, if it be your good will and pleasure, a proposal of Alexandros for whom all this quarrel came about. The wealth which Alexandros brought to this place, would that he had died first, all this he will gladly give, and add thereto more of his own. But the lawful wife of King Menelaus, he says he will not yield, although the people demand that he should do it. They told me also to propose to you, if it please you, that we should keep truce until we can burn our dead. After that we will fight again, until fate shall decide between us and give the victory to one side or the other." They heard this in a deep silence. After a while, Diomedes spoke. "Let no man now accept this offer from Alexandros, neither the treasure nor Helen herself. Even a plain fool knows that the bonds of destruction already are fast about the people of Troy." All cheered loudly at this and approved what Diomedes had said, and then King Agamemnon answered the herald. "You hear what the Achaeans say to your message, Aeneas. You have their answer, and this is my pleasure too. For the dead I do not demur. For no one can begrudge the bodies of the dead their consolation of fire. To our oaths let Zeus be witness, the loud thundering lord of Hera." With these words, he lifted up his scepter to all gods, and Odysseus returned to Ilios. There, Trojans and Dardanians sat all together in assembly, awaiting the herald. He came and delivered his message, standing in their midst. Then they made ready to fetch wood and to bring in the dead. The Argives, on their part, went out to bring back their dead and to fetch their wood. The sun had now risen from the deep stream of ocean, gently flowing, to begin his upward path, and he was just striking the fields when the two peoples met. It was hard to tell man from man, but they washed off the blood and lifted them into the carts, weeping bitterly. Priam ordered them not to make loud lamentation, so in silent sorrow they piled the bodies upon the pyre and burnt them with fire before they returned to the city. So on the other part, the Achaeans piled the bodies upon their pyre in sorrow and burnt them and returned to their ships. Next day, before it was quite dawn, while the night was between light and dark, men chosen from the Achaean army gathered about the pyre where the bodies lay as they had been brought from the plain, and they made one barrow for all in common. Then, joined to the barrow, they built walls and ramparts to protect the ships and the camp, with proper gateways large enough for the horses to pass. Outside, they dug a deep, wide moat and fixed stakes along the edge. While the Achaeans were busy on this work, the gods were watching with great enterprise in the presence of Zeus' flash lightning, and Poseidon, Earthshaker, addressed the company. "Father Zeus, is there any mortal man left upon the earth who will tell the immortals what he means to do? Do you see now again how the Achaeans have built a wall around their ships and run a great moat about it, without any sacrifice to the gods? The fame of this will spread wherever the morning shines, and they will forget that wall which I and Phoebus Apollo built with such hard labor for Laomedon." Zeus Cloud-Gatherer was angry at this, and said, "Good gracious, Earthshaker, what a thing to say. Another god might have been startled at this notion, but not a strong and mighty god like you. Your fame spreads as far as the morning shines. Why, look here. When the Achaeans go back to their native land, you can break down their wall and smother it in the sea, and cover the beach with sand, and there will be an end of the great wall of the Achaeans." So the sun set, and the work was done, and they all slaughtered oxen and took their meal in the camp. And a fleet of ships came in from Lemnos with plenty of wine, sent by Euneus Iasonides, Hypsipyle's son. He sent a special cargo of wine for the princes, 1,000 gallons. From this fleet the Achaeans got their wine and paid in bronze or iron, or some in hides, or oxen on the hoof, or slaves. They made a grand feast and enjoyed themselves all night long, and so did the Trojans in their own city. And all night long Zeus all-wise thundered awfully and meditated trouble for them. They were green with fear, and they spilt their wine upon the ground, and no man would drink until he made his libation to Zeus Cronion. Then they lay down and took the boon of sleep.